Welcome into the Fan Pre-Games, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, for the next hour. And then we launch into Leafs Red Wings preseason hockey. We'll be doing that up on 590 as well. Saris will join us. Kristen Shilton will join us. And Justin, we've got an hour to talk about this beautiful game of baseball and some hockey.
Yeah, we just have the one game today in the wild card round.
Maybe good.
It was not the full buffet as it's been, but we will tee up Brewers and Mets for sure. But the NHL regular season, it starts next week, but it really starts tomorrow with some games overseas.
Which doesn't that's not fair. Those shouldn't count as regular season, and the preseason still continues, and then there's another regular season.
Yeah, they could just not just do these preseason games beginning tomorrow.
Or just make it preseason games.
Sure, but I think you want, if you're going overseas, you want to sell it. You want it to be real deal. You don't want to be seeing, guys who are way, way down the depth chart. So I think it's fairly important that it's for real while they're over there. But it does throw things out of whack just a little bit, which means, though, that there's a game tomorrow that it's kind of our last chance to fully preview things because, we'll do preview stuff next week. But there will be some data points as it pertains to the regular season once we are on the air tomorrow. So let's talk for a few minutes about what's ahead, the 2024-2025 NHL season. If you're gauging the next 7-8 months, Ailish, what is the story of the season for you as you look ahead?
I think there's definitely quite a few. I don't know if I've always felt like there's so many answers to this question. I feel like every time we kind of know who the best and the best are, but I'm very interested to see what the Oilers do after last year's cup final devastation. I thought following that story all last year was improbable. They became, a team that I think Canada cheered for, whether people wanted to admit that or not. It's been a drought in Canada with the Stanley Cup for quite a while, as we all know, and they might still be the best chance. And if they're not, who bounces them out of that spot? But what they do this year with the bitter taste of getting so close and feeling that devastation. And we're going to see tomorrow Amazon series comes out, and we've already seen some clips from behind the scenes. Like, I think we're going to see a different look at McDavid, Dreisaitl, Hyman, Skinner, that entire franchise, what that meant to get one goal away from overtime, one win away from winning the Stanley Cup. And I'm just really interested to see how they can follow that up this year.
Yeah, the Amazon story definitely supports the notion that the Oilers are the story of the NHL season. And there is recent precedent here for the Oilers being, front and center. Because we just saw the Florida Panthers go to a Stanley Cup final, lose, come back, and win the Stanley Cup final. It seems in the NHL nowadays.
Like, once you get a taste.
This isn't a perfect science, but you got to have some success before you get over the hump. And we've seen it recently, and it definitely makes you think, and the Oilers are odds-on favorites to win the Stanley Cup, but learning from last year and applying it this year might be the key to success for them. My story, did you see the Leafs' recent social post where they asked people what constitutes being old?
I did.
And like, they're talking about like 96 people born in 96 being old. Like, excuse me. I'm not. It did offend me. But
did they say 96? I thought they said like in the 90s.
Someone said 96. I believe it was Matthew Knight. He was like 21. Like, we'll cut him some slack there. But I felt old again the same way today when I opened up sportsnet.ca and looked at the top 10 storylines for the season. And it's Alex Ovechkin entering year 20. Yeah. Times are a-changing in the NHL. I mean, we got a Utah team, which definitely tells you how things have changed. But for me, you're looking at like the last gasp for Crosby. Maybe the last contract he signs. He did it recently. You're looking at Ovechkin and this chase that is nearing conclusion, 42 goals away. Things in the NHL from a generational standpoint are shifting. And the people that I like, not first encountered, but like in adulthood, I guess, first encountered being someone playing hockey when I was young and knowing who Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin are and tracking their careers all the way here consciously, it does feel like things are changing, and Ovechkin's going to be a key part of that storyline. So will Sidney Crosby, but it just feels like we've already entered that new world, but the old world is kind of exiting now, which I think is a key storyline this year.
Yeah, Ovi only 42 goals away. Does he get it this year? I mean, It was a hard watch at times last year. We remember, I think it was the opening, one of the first nights when they played the Maple Leafs. We were doing the call for 590 there during intermissions, and he had like 10 shots in the first period.
Threw himself in the net.
Yeah, and it was...
It looked desperate rather than like...
It was tough.
Alex Ovechkin of old.
And then he went through a little streak where he was putting the puck in the net, but he's 42 away from that goal. We're pretty much all aware that he's probably not going to retire until he gets it, and he most likely will get it. Will he get it this season? That will be the main story we'll be tracking. I'm sure every time that the Capitals play, is how many goals away is he? How many does? What's his pace? Is he going to do it this year? And I'm sure Gretzky, who's now in the media world too, has got his eyes on it too. But yeah, the Ovi and Sidney Crosby connection, I think you're right. Like it's nostalgic, but it's humbling because now there's kids that are being drafted that aren't saying their favorite player was Sidney Crosby. They're saying their favorite player was Austin Matthews, who you're like, wait, what? He's still so young. And the kids that are coming up, their favorite players aren't the ones that maybe we connected to when we were young pups. We'll take your text at 590-590 as well. What's the story of the 2024-25 NHL season? We've got Ovi, we've got Sid. I also think with their franchises, the directions they're going in, it's an interesting parallel too. Obviously, the Capitals, they'd probably need a big-time rebuild, but they're holding on. And then what Crosby is maybe allowed for the Penguins to do, they're not really saying rebuild. They still want to win. You hope that you see someone like Sidney Crosby get another chance, but I just don't think they've done enough. It'll be interesting. Utah coming in.
Utah coming in is huge. I mean, you know, we've seen over the last, I guess, 12, 13, maybe 14 years, I think four different franchises, like the introduction of a new franchise going back to Winnipeg and the relocation and then Vegas and Seattle and now Utah. And there's not the same buzz, I think, without the expansion, right? Like it's a bit of, hey,
expansion
we're just,
draft is pretty
we're
buzzy.
Just moving up the war. It's completely new, right? It's like this thing that we haven't seen before. There's nothing that you can draw on. You have no idea what it's going to look like. But with Utah, I do feel like it's a little bit, it's not all the way to expansion, but it is fascinating nonetheless, because you've got this new power broker in Ryan Smith in the league. You've got a market that everybody is convinced is going to be amazing. And it took from what was like the ugly stepchild of the NHL for ever in the Arizona Coyotes. So Utah has the chance to make a huge splash and really add a different element and dynamic to this league. And I'm really curious to see how it all plays out. I think it might be splashier in the end than Seattle was. I think they can match Vegas because Vegas was this entire thing. They were great off the bat. They go to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
They were different, and they were bigger than a normal expansion team. But I think we could be talking about Utah potentially overshadowing what the Kraken did a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'm excited for Utah. I think, I've never been, but I think it just seems like a place that already has a sporting culture that's excited to hook on, and you're right about Ryan Smith. Like, it seems like he's doing everything right, not just because of concession stand prices, but, like, the way that they're allowing for fans to buy in and to buy in cheap and to get themselves like hooked on this team early on and making it accessible. And they have a team with some young talent. Their jersey colors are pretty cool. They're probably going to be the Yeti next year. So this year they can be the hockey club, and then they'll graduate into, you know, whatever they decide to be. Obviously we're going to see the Devils play tomorrow against the Sabres in Prague. I'm excited, and maybe it's adjacent because we've got some bets on it, but like Sheldon Keefe taking over the Devils. Some of the new faces, like I think he is still the front runner for the Jack Adams Award. That's a team that needs to actually make something happen this year. They're always like that fun team, them and the Hurricanes. Oh yeah, this is going to be the team, mm-hmm. right? And then they have fallen short. So you got Sheldon Keefe with a new young squad. It'll be interesting to watch the parallels of Craig Berube with the Leafs and Sheldon Keefe with the Devils, and they play each other pretty early on. So we'll see enough of those storylines here, at least in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, the liberation of Sheldon Keefe, as I'm kind of putting it, is definitely an interesting story. He's got a great team. By all accounts, he's a great coach, even though he didn't get it done when it mattered the most in the playoffs. But yeah, I think he was a guy who maybe not should have taken some time off, but could have taken some time off. But you can't turn down an opportunity like that in a division that looks very gettable for the New Jersey Devils. But I do think that is just a sidebar to what's happening in Toronto, because this is a team that has failed, has a new direction. It's not yin and yang, or it's not complete polar opposites, I don't think, from Sheldon Keefe, but maybe it is. I mean, what Craig Berube does, the opportunity he has in Toronto, is going to be one of the main storylines of the entire season. Can he change the DNA of a team that has showed that it has flawed DNA, at least when it matters most? That's going to be front and center. Craig Berube, can he turn another team into a Stanley Cup champion, or at least a team that can make more inroads in the postseason?
I'm sure we'll get a lot of Sheldon Keefe sound bites up here, at least on Kipper and Bourne, because Berube doesn't talk enough for them to use that. All right, let's shift over to baseball. We're going to Mets and Brewers Game 3 up on Sportsnet. That's a 7 o'clock start. And to help tee it up, is Eno Saris joining us of The Athletic and Fangraphs. How is it going?
I'm doing great.
We're excited to have you on because we just can't get enough of October baseball. It's only day 3, really, but it has been enjoyable. And tonight we've got Game 3, Mets and Brewers. So we're looking at this series, and obviously it comes down to, like, you win and you're in. Who do you think has the upper hand in tonight's Game 3?
I don't know. I mean, you've got Jose Quintana out there for the Mets, who's just a veteran that I might take Tobias Myers, the young Brewers starter that's out there, just on intrigue alone and maybe upside. But, you know, Quintana's been spinning it really well this year, and he's sort of a crafty veteran. I think once it switches over to the bullpen, if the Brewers have a lead, the Milwaukee has a definite edge in the bullpen, where it's kind of Edwin Diaz and hope the other guys get it done in New York right now. So, you know, they need a lot out of Quintana, and they're really tired. So I think if anything, the edge goes slightly to Milwaukee.
If indeed the Mets do get through, I mean, they're kind of entering a gauntlet with three absolutely massive teams in the NL and the Phils, the Padres and the Dodgers, but the Mets have this pluckiness to them. I mean, they've made it this far, and not to say that, you know, the Phillies will be like sweating it too much, but the Mets have had this good run and playing good baseball. But it seems like it's a different scenario, right? Like a lot of you know, a lot of excitement about the Tigers, a lot of excitement about the Royals, maybe because they're entering a situation where they can have success. Is it too simplistic to say that, you know, the pit of lions that await the Mets will simply be too much? Or do you see some upside from the Mets if they could potentially get through?
Well, you know, as much as I've studied the postseason, mostly I come away with it's a crapshoot and anything can happen. But the one thing that I've found that really matters in the postseason and that sticks from the regular season on, you know, everyone says pitching and defense, but what I've found is the lineup matters most. And one thing that gets a little bit obscured because they have such a good pitcher's park is that the Phillies lineup and the Mets lineup can really hang with anyone. You know, on the year, once you adjust for that park, they were a top 10 offense right there with the Phillies. And I think you've seen that in the postseason, where every time the other team comes up, you know, the Mets kind of have a response, and, you know, at least offensively. So the flip side of that, the reason why I think pitching and defense don't, predict as well who wins is because in the postseason, you can do all sorts of crazy strategies where you have your starters throwing on relief days. And you remember the Nationals made it through all the way with like five guys they trusted. They trusted three starters, four starters, and like one or two relievers. And they just made sure that all the innings in games they were going to win were pitched by those five guys. And so the Mets could pull off something along those lines if everything breaks right for them, based mostly on winning. I mean, I think you even saw it last year with the Rangers and Diamondbacks. Not great pitching staffs, really good lineups, and just enough pitching. So that would be why the Mets would make it through, I think.
Okay, if you're using the terminology of crapshoot in the postseason, I mean, maybe the Orioles fall into that. Yet to win a postseason game in a long, long time. But they're always hyped up during the preseason. Everybody believes that this team has the young talent that's finally going to get over the hump, and yet again, they fail to deliver. So what needs to change if you're the Baltimore Orioles, you're a fan base, you're looking at this team that gets you excited for nothing?
Yeah, it's not just the postseason this year. They've been, you know, kind of a sub 500 team since the halfway mark. So, you know, it's not just like they were a juggernaut all year and then just had a bad 3-game series. It's a little bit more like you know, why has Adley Rutschman been 30% worse than league average for 4 months? You know, what's going on there? Does he need more days off? Does he need to DH more? You know, I think there's, you have to figure some things out. I think there's going to be a lot of temptation to trade. There always is. They say, oh, you've got all these young players, trade one for pitching. But like I just said, I think the lineup is the most important thing. So I think they need to figure out why the hitting went away in the second half. And if some of their young guys like Heston Kerstadt or Kobe Mayo are going to be part of that solution, or if they trade those guys for a bat, like a mid-career bat, or, you know, go real heavy in free agency and try to pull Juan Soto away from the biggest contenders for his services. So I think that, you know, people think a lot about pitching with the Orioles, but I think really the biggest thing for them is to figure out why the offense disappeared in the second half, because that's what's happened in the postseason. The offense has disappeared. So there's something going on there, and they need to figure it out.
So you did your bold predictions in The Athletic in March. You had the Royals getting into the postseason, so you won that one there. But with the 56-106 record last year, like, how did you see that one coming? What made you believe that this team could make the jump and be a fun, plucky kind of underdog team to cheer for?
Yeah, I think I might have been right for the wrong reasons a little bit.
It's okay. You still get the win.
Yeah, that's right. I highlighted the young hitters, and Bobby Witt was special this year, and Vinny Pascantino was pretty good, and Michael Massey is better than people think. But some of the guys that I liked, like MJ Melendez, Nelson Velasquez, and Michael Garcia, didn't really step to the fore. Instead, their investment in short-term pitching, and this is something that I think is important for Toronto as well, is that, you know, investment in short-term pitching can really have outsized effects. So they went out and got Seth Lugo, who wasn't valued by the market that heavily. I mean, they paid $345 million for him, which these days is kind of almost back-end prices. They got Michael Wacha for 2 years and $32 million. So they didn't spend a ton, but those two pitchers alone gave them 370 innings of a 3.2 ERA, you know, this season, and was a huge part of what, you know, what turned them around. And then one thing that I think is really important for them and might be a part of the Baltimore story is they were a little bit aggressive at the deadline. They went and got Hunter Harvey, a cost-controlled guy that they could have for a while, reliever from the Nationals, and they went and got Lucas Erceg, also the same thing, really good reliever they'll have for a while. They got him from the A's, and those two moves I think were really important, because I know that Harvey's hurt right now, but Erceg right now is their best reliever. And if they make it through, it's going to be that plan of Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, and Lucas Erceg, and not too much in between. So the big concern that I have now going forward for the Royals is you might be able to anticipate this. Will they score enough runs? They scored 3 runs in 2 games, and that was enough, but I don't know if that's going to be enough against the Yankees.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, like, did they have the elixir to beat the Yankees with that short-term pitching, with that superstar in Bobby Witt? And maybe they are, maybe they have enough to make it interesting. Maybe they get through, but ultimately the Yankees will write their own story, it seems, this postseason. How bullish are you on their chances? It's broken really well for them, at least on paper, to get to the World Series. How much pressure is on them to do so?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to face a Royals team that can't throw Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo at them at the beginning of the series, and use Lucas Erceg in 2 games. So, you know, there is some value in sitting around. I know people focus on, oh, the bye, they'll get rusty, but I don't know that Juan Soto and Aaron Judge ever get rusty. So I'm betting on the Yankees to come out of the American League. I just think that they're a step above everybody. I think the National League is a little bit wide open. I personally think the Padres will come out because it is a great blend of contact and power, and their pitching staff, even if Joe Musgrove is hurt, is really, I think their pitching staff is the best suited for October, the best in the game, and they've got a really deep bullpen. So I'm thinking the Padres are going to come out, but it could be Padres, Phillies, Dodgers. Any one of those teams is really going to be a great contender. And I think, you know, maybe the National League winner wins the World Series, but I see the Yankees as a step above the American League, the teams that are in the American League.
Among those teams in the NL, which one like faces the most pressure to win now? I mean, Shohei just signed. The Padres do have some youth to them. The Phillies on the cusp, or at least trying to be on the cusp again of winning this World Series. If you were to look at those three and think, yeah, like they got to do it now. It has to happen here. Which one fits the bill?
That's a really great question. I think the Dodgers, they always feel like, oh, there'll be an investment there. You know, we'll have a great big payroll and, you know, they're pretty good player development. I think there's an ongoing pressure to, hey, win in the postseason for once, you know? I mean, some people want to denigrate that 2020 championship and say, you know, they're a great regular season team. So they've got ongoing pressure. But in terms of, like, the team's getting older and, you know, what's going to happen payroll-wise, I think it's the Phillies in a way, because there is an older core there, and they've sacrificed a fair amount of prospect value to get this bullpen to where it is and to get this team to where it is. So I think in some ways the cupboard is a little bit more bare. Also, as much as I think A.J. Preller is going to get in trouble for having three $300 million players on his team in that market, he's so good at finding guys. Like, he traded everybody away. He traded DJ Abrams away, and shortstop for the Nationals now. He traded away all James Wood, guy for the Nationals. He traded away all these great players, and yet Jackson Merrill remains and, you know, could be the rookie of the year, was a great center fielder for them, big part of this core. So as much as I think he'll get in trouble for having Manny, Tatis, and Xander Bogaerts on these huge deals, he seems to pull rabbits out of hats all the time. So it's a little bit maybe more on the Phillies with their age and their payroll. And Dombrowski's got this reputation of kind of using up all the prospects in order to win a title.
We're chatting with Eno Saris of The Athletic. I think the only teams we haven't mentioned were the Tigers and the Guardians, and I think I'm maybe most excited for that series. Two really cool surprises this season. Nice, like, locations for us here, kind of around our neighborhood at least. But you know, clashing in the ALDS, like, how far can the Tigers' momentum take them? Because that's what I like in a story, is a team that everybody counted out, that finds their way in, but then actually does something out of it. Can they, you know, get through the Guardians and make something more than just a really great second half that surprised everybody?
I think so. I mean, Riley Green in the outfield is a kind of a secret star that people don't know as well. And then they've had some young guys, in particular, Parker Meadows, Colt Keith, and Spencer Torkelson, that are fairly high picks. There was a lot invested in them. They struggled, and they were really bad this year. All three of them were so bad that two of them got sent down, Torkelson and Meadows. So they're not like a young team that has never seen the bad side of baseball. No, these guys actually were, you know, sent down after they were supposed to be the future. So I think that they are a little bit more weathered than their age suggests. And it's a really interesting group where they do a lot of mixing and matching. Andy Ibañez can play anywhere. Matt Vierling can play anywhere. So they've got good lefty righty. You know, they remind me a little bit of the Giants team that won 107 games by, you know, throwing openers at you, bullpen games. You know, we've got three or four platoons. It's not even possible to have five platoons, but somehow we have one, you know. And, you know, that's kind of how they run things. And I think it allows A.J. Hinch to shine because he makes really good decisions and he has a lot of weapons. Now, they won't be the same weapons as the Yankees if they get that far, but it might just work if you put them all in the right place. And so far, you know, Hinch has been doing it, and these guys have been really resilient. And in any series that they get into, one thing that they'll have that's really cool is they'll probably have the best pitcher. Tarek Skubal, I think, is on his way to winning the AL Cy Young. And he's just this roaring guy that throws 100 and just he embodies the Tiger spirit. And I think in some ways, you know, having that ace in the hole, you know, sets everything else up. That guy's probably going to throw 7 or 8 and keep the bullpen right. So if we can just move the bullpen pieces around him on the days before and after, and we'll be good. So that's kind of their ethos. And I think it could work.
I loved AJ Hinch's post, I guess, champagne shower quote. I don't know if you guys seen it, but it was like, I'm not sure who, but somebody let those Tigers get hot. And then, you know, I think I love the vibes coming from that clubhouse. So, you know, we appreciate you jumping on. Enjoy tonight's action and the rest of the postseason. Hopefully we get a chance to chat soon. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Eno Saris of The Athletic and Fangraphs. Tonight you can watch Mets and Brewers game 3 at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. And we've got some best bets from that game.
Yeah, Jose Quintana versus Tobias Myers for the Milwaukee Brewers. Honestly, never seen Tobias Myers pitch, but some pretty good numbers. Quintana's on a nice run lately as well, two earned runs in 25 innings this month. He gave those runs up to the Brewers time out in an outing where he struck out 9. So lots of confusing stuff, honestly, but I guess I just go back to the feeling. And
Eno liked the Brewers too.
And I feel like the Brewers are a better team. It just feels like it's like, what, toothpaste, glue, gum, whatever you're doing to erect something that is flimsy.
Yeah.
That's what the Mets are doing.
Okay.
Like they're building something that is not drilled to the bedrock. And eventually I think it's going to... it's going to sneak up on them. The Brewers get through, and the Brewers make fairly easy work for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Okay, that's good for me then. My best bet comes from the Leafs-Red Wings game. Who doesn't love a little preseason hockey, which you can catch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 1. That's a 7 o'clock game, and we'll be on the radio. I'm going to take the over. If you look at this lineup tonight, it is sloppy for the Leafs, at least.
Yeah.
The Red Wings have put in...
And impressive from the Red Wings.
A very nice lineup for the home team. I'm just thinking that there's a lot of pucks in the net. Sloppy could be the way of this one. We'll talk about this more after the break with Kristen Chilton and then in our pregame show. But it feels like the last tryout for a lot of the Leafs players tonight. Their entire D core possibly trying out for a spot, even on the Marlies at this point. So I think it could be a game quite lopsided, and the Leafs are like plus +2 on the money line, which you never see. So you know the books are heavy on the Detroit Red Wings tonight. So that would be my best bet.
There you go. We'll track that one.
We will.
The course of the night.
And we'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Kristen Chilton of ESPN, who will join us to go through a little preseason chat, talk about the rest of the league. The Amazon series comes out tomorrow. Some great teasers out there. Something crazy about Connor McDavid that you'll just... have to wait to hear. That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan after us will be Mets Brewers up on Sportsnet 7 o'clock. That's game 3. Winner goes on. You could catch Leafs and Red Wings on Sportsnet 1 and then also on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, where we will stay seated for the evening to tell you about these Marlies who are in the lineup tonight.
Marlies and very much the Detroit Red Wings.
It is a lopsided affair tonight at the, I was going to say, it's not Joe Louis anymore.
No, Caesars.
Little Caesars. Eh.
Come on now.
I was actually at Little Caesars last year. It's a nice rink. All right, let's bring in Kristen Chilton of ESPN, help tee up tonight and look around the NHL. Kristen, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, guys. How are you?
We're really well. We opened up our show today asking, what's the story of the 24-25 NHL season? For you, what would it be?
Oh, wow. You're putting me on the spot there. right off the bat. The story of the season, I mean, gosh, there's a lot that you could do. Are you looking at the Florida Panthers to be, you know, 3 straight cup final appearances with how their roster has been set? Are you looking at, the Dallas Stars maybe potentially really pushing their way into that upper echelon this season? And what about the Edmonton Oilers? Those are, those are the 3 teams that I'm really curious about to see kind of what happens going forward this year. I think Edmonton, with how last year ended, but with how that team is kind of constructed and put together, it's going to be really exciting to see what they do this year. And even closer to home here in Toronto, curious to see what these Maple Leafs are going to be able to do given the changes that they made and sort of the juncture that they're at.
Yeah, if not the story, the Maple Leafs are at least an arm's reach away to being the story. I am curious, though, the Amazon series getting a lot of buzz. I haven't seen any of it. I've definitely seen some clips and some clips that definitely make me want to watch the series. But I do feel like it's going to color at least the storylines early because it might change the way we feel about certain players, certain teams, and certain things. I guess the question would be, A, have you seen it? And B, like, this insight, is this finally what we've been waiting for? I mean, we did it with the Leafs before, kind of. And it didn't really give us anything. Is this finally going to be the thing that scratches the itch?
Yeah, I have been fortunate. I've seen the series, and I know that there's a lot of certainly some juicier moments and maybe ones that we wouldn't normally expect. But I do think that it signals maybe a little bit more of that changing of the guard in the NHL where guys want to show a little bit more of their personality, a little bit more of their, you know, that side of themselves away from the rink. And not even just away from the rink, but like who they are when they're there and not in front of the media and what goes on. I mean, I'm sure everyone's seen, you know, some of these more viral clips of Connor McDavid, the emotion that he showed in the dressing room. If you've seen, you know, the William Nylander clip, that interaction that he had on the bench, obviously with Matthews and Marner there in the playoffs, and then also seeing another side of Nylander and David Pastrnak, where, you know, what they do in their home lives, or we're looking at Jeremy Swayman now, Matthew Tkachuk, like these guys that maybe we have an idea of who they are, but series like this is a chance, I think, for players to just show that, you know, they're not hockey robots. You know, they have other interests, they have other hobbies, they have other things that, you know, take up their time and that make them interesting people and that sort of drive what they do at their jobs every day. So I think that when it's one team, it can be hard because you're counting on the whole group to drive the success of it. Whereas in this case, they were able to kind of pick and choose guys that really wanted to be involved. And that does change things because you're getting the best out of those players instead of, you know, kind of pushing guys into the spotlight because you need to complete the narrative of a team, as opposed to, in this case, it's a whole league. And I do think that that added some cool elements to the Amazon series that maybe we didn't see specifically with the one that they did with the Leafs.
Yeah, let's stick on those Leafs because I think the William Nylander insight will be interesting specifically with, you know, he gets injured and then the cameras are there with him when he's watching. Like, I think we'll just learn a lot more about these superstars and some of the, you know, trials and tribulations that they go through as well. And it's hard sometimes as media members or fans to really get to know who they are. So I'm looking forward to just seeing them a little bit, like, less stiff at the podium, you know, like, this is me in real life. But if we talk about the Maple Leafs and we've got their game on afterwards, so we're kind of dialed in on this upcoming season, are you more or less confident in, like, the ability for them to earn a different result this season? Because that's the main question in this area is, did Craig Berube and moving the C over to Austin Matthews do enough, like, fundamentally to make people believe?
Well, I think the Berube hire is really the key for the Leafs. I think he has to set the tone. And I do believe from what we've seen and heard so far, that's what's happening, is that he is instilling a mindset, a focus, a blueprint, so to speak, not to borrow from the Leafs themselves on that one, but just a way that this team can play that's different from how they have been the last several years. And that was, you know, whether it was under Mike Babcock transitioning to Sheldon Keefe, it was a lot the same of how the Leafs went about their business. And now it looks different under Berube. They do look just not, it's not like it's taking away their skill or their creativity necessarily, but it's adding something, you know, and we say that a lot about, it's not about what you take away necessarily, it's about what you add to what you do. And that's where you can be successful, because you're not going to reinvent the wheel here. You're not going to completely take away or detract from what has made this team very successful in the regular season. We can't take that from the Leafs, is what they've done well in the regular season. It has not translated to the playoffs, obviously, just yet. But I do think that Berube, over the course of this 82-game regular season, is, if he can keep on them about the right mindset, the right, you know, structure, and if those habits, if they don't get away from them and get lazy with them or get too comfortable with what they're doing, and they continue to play that north-south game, and there is a little bit of the physicality, the grit, the toughness, whatever you want to call it, mixed in, that's where it starts. And that's going to be way more important than who's wearing a letter or anything like that. It's got to be the messaging from the coach, obviously being in line with the captain, and from there going down through the rest of the team. So I think that the Berube hire so far seems like it's going well. We won't know for sure until the season starts. But, of course, there is also the question of Nylander. Is he going to be able to make that successful transition, be their second line center? And if not, that's a bit of a question mark. Is their center depth? I don't know how that's going to affect them in the long term if Nylander doesn't excel there. So a couple, you know, key things are still to be answered for the Leafs, as it is for every team. But you've got to like, at least so far, the position that they seem to have put themselves in.
Yeah. Do you think the hire, the Berube hire, offers Mitch Marner a clean slate? Obviously, there's tons of conversation about Mitch Marner heading into the summer. There were a lot of prognostications. There were a lot of ideas of what could happen. Ultimately, nothing happens. And cooler heads may be prevailing, maybe some harsh conversations, and maybe some reform, at least in terms of the way this is going to go. But with Berube here and with Mitch Marner having the no trade protection and everything, we know we're going to get to the finish line, wherever that finish line may be. But do you think it clears the slate and allows Mitch Marner to kind of press the reset button?
Well, the great thing for Marner at this point is that there's been so much else going on with the Leafs that we're not even really talking about him right now. Like the preseason, it's just kind of been, he's been able to go about his business, you know, and get ready for the season. And that's where, if we do start turning the spotlight back on Marner, it's going to be because of how he's playing. And it's going to be, okay, well, now you're in this contract here. You want to earn your next contract. The Leafs want to obviously get something done with you. And Berube coming in, it's fresh eyes. It's a fresh coach who's going to put him in. Is it going to be different situations to succeed? What sort of messaging is Marner getting from Berube about what's expected? What sort of influence will the coach have? I mean, I don't know if it's a completely clean slate, if it ever can be in this town for any player. But I think for Marner, it's an opportunity to sort of reset and almost look at this as like a one-year deal for himself and just say, if this is how it's going to go, then I am going to play on this one-year deal and just show, you know, this is my value. This is why I believe I'm worth X, Y, or Z. And, you know, with all of the other changes that Toronto has made, it's a great opportunity for him to play his best hockey because he's going to have, obviously, great line mates. Their defense has, on paper at least, improved. They've got, you know, it looks like pretty steady goaltending at this point. So there's a lot where it doesn't have to be all this pressure on Marner necessarily to perform in some new role like Nylander. But that's what comes for Nylander with you get the, you know, what was it, the $92 million. I mean, you're now, there's a lot of pressure on you. That pressure isn't there quite yet on Marner because he hasn't signed the new deal. Mm-hmm. So for him, when you talk about a reset or you talk about a fresh start, yes, it comes from you've changed, your coach, and that's going to be something different. But it also comes from, you know, that chance to play like this is a season where it's all about you and what you can do and what you can show. And I do think that that's going to be really valuable for him.
I can't help but listen to your answer about Marner and find so many parallels with Robertson, right? A year where you got to prove yourself, a year where you're looking to also get paid afterwards, a year where there's more opportunity for you in the lineup. And he scored the last three goals of the preseason. And I know it's preseason, but he's looked good when he's been out there and he pops and he puts a puck in the net. But yeah, there's some, you know, defensive mishaps and he's not a perfect player. I don't know if the Leafs need him to be a perfect player, but I just wonder if what Robertson wants and what he views as this upcoming season where he should play is exactly where the Leafs can provide him a spot. And having that one-year contract that he signed, maybe reluctantly or not, how do you think that Nick Robertson plays into this season with the Maple Leafs or maybe with a different organization?
Well, for Robertson, listen, it's a great opportunity for him because when you look at the Leafs, they don't get a ton, or they didn't last year get a ton of scoring outside of, you know, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, and I think Tyler Bertuzzi maybe had 20 goals or 21 goals last year. But they didn't get a ton of production out of their other forwards consistently in terms of goal scoring that they, you know, might have needed, especially when it came to the postseason. So not that I'm trying to rush Robertson through the year, but I mean, he's a goal scorer. That's what he does. He's small. He's not necessarily, you know, going to bowl anybody over out on the ice, but at the, well, I guess, you know, maybe, you know, not to say that he can't, you know, have that element to his game as well, just in being, you know, the way that he skates and the way that he moves on the ice. But, you know, that's what you have to like if you're Robertson, is see an opportunity to be a really strong depth goal scorer for this team. And that's how you work yourself into the mix, is that you do what you do best. And if this truly is for him, that one-year deal where he's not just auditioning for the Leafs, but he sees himself auditioning for, you know, 31 other teams around the league, then that's what he has to be focused on. And as you say, not a perfect player, but the Leafs aren't going to ever ask that of him. That's not the contract he signed. That's not why he's here. He's not here to be perfect. He's here to, you know, contribute offensively, and to be somebody that they can rely on. And I do believe that we've seen in the preseason that he's capable of that. Now, can he translate that to the regular season when other teams are put together and their best defensemen are out there and he's, you know, playing with, you know, some of these, it's also the caliber of player that he would be playing with potentially when he's not on the, you know, the roster like he is tonight, where it's more Marlies heavy. You know, also, what does that look like? And how does he, you know, mesh with those guys? That's maybe what we haven't seen as much of in terms of play. But there's still one more preseason game. Don't know what the roster will be like for that one. But, you know, for Robertson, this is your chance. You know, this is whether you wanted to sign a deal or not, whether you want it out or not. It doesn't matter now because you're here and you may as well make the most of it. And there is a lot to make of it if he does this right.
Last one for you, Kristen. If there's the shortest path, the path to least resistance to be improved, it's I suppose on the blue line with some big changes, a lot of familiarity, at least when it comes to Brad Treliving with Chris Tanev and Oliver Ekman-Larsson way back from their time in Arizona. I think it's a lot to ask of OEL to handle top 4 minutes. It may be a lot to ask of Chris Tanev to completely transform a blue line, but with those two pieces, those two new pieces, do you think they approach this season far better than they did last?
I think the Leafs definitely have to be stronger on the back end with those two there. I mean, like you say, it's not as if, you know, these guys are in their 30s, they've been around. It's that experience, though, that, you know, it's sort of that perfect, we talk about guys in their prime, this is sort of, it's a little bit post-prime maybe, for these players, but for defensemen, I mean, you just need smart puck moving defensemen, and that's what they can give you. I mean, you think about even when Ron Hainsey was in Toronto, I mean, it made a difference because he's out there, he's yelling at you, he's telling you where to be, he's, you know, he's directing traffic, and those are the elements that those veterans bring that the Leafs have maybe been lacking a bit, and to be coupled in with players that still can contribute at a high level, that are still playing great hockey, that can still do what they have done their whole careers and do it at a high level. That's where I think the Leafs are going to be improved, is that the communication sometimes on the ice you see, especially in Toronto's own end, is they just get lost. They get confused and pucks end up going in their own net. And it's been a problem for them. And from what you can see and from what should happen, ideally, is that you're just going to get that veteran presence and you're just not going to have to be fumbling around so much. You can get those clean zone exits. You can just be transitioning faster. And that's where the Leafs, I thought, just got, you know, maybe bogged down too much, was in their own transition game of just getting out of their own end, getting out of their own way sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the Ekman-Larsson, especially the experience he got last year in Florida, he got to play that role, and I thought he played it really well, where it can be complimentary. He doesn't have to, you know, it won't be every night necessarily handling the biggest load in terms of minutes, but if he can bring to Toronto what he brought to Florida, that's a lot. And I spent a lot of time around that Panthers team in the lead up to their playoff run last year and saw how valuable Ekman-Larsson, you know, was for them. And if he can translate that for the Leafs, I think that they're really going to benefit on their back end. And it's going to just end up, you know, going through the entire lineup and helping their forward group as well.
Well, Kristen, we appreciate your time ahead of this game tonight and ahead of the regular season kicking off tomorrow, technically, but, you know, not really till next week. We hope we get a chance to chat with you again this season. Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
That's Kristen Chilton of ESPN. And Leafs and Red Wings are up next. We're going to have that on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And we got some texts. We were talking earlier in the show, and we asked Kristen right off the hop there, what's the story of the season? I got a couple. Brian in Toronto says, story of the year is the Leafs not only finishing first in the Atlantic, going to win the most beautiful trophies in all sports. Mm. They have built this team correctly. I really like how they look at net, fix the blue line. I think Pacioretty is a great ad. Stanley Cup final. Leafs over Oilers.
That would be a dream.
While they don't compete for the puck, the Wings will also Wings will also make the playoffs.
Okay. I do think for the first time, and I'm not that bullish on the Toronto Maple Leafs, but for the first time, at least since Brad for Living has been here, they got like the personnel that meets the playing style and the coach. Like, there's everything that's uniform now. Before, it was like, for a living, thinks this way. Sheldon Keefe thinks this way. This was a roster created by Kyle Dubas that has an impact from Mike Babcock way back when. Like, it just seemed like, yeah, a lot of people pull in different directions. Can they get uniform? Can they all be on the same page? I think that will definitely help. Stanley Cup, that might be a little ambitious, though.
Hey, well, Brian's a believer. Just quickly here. A reminder that Sportsnet 590 The Fan is proud to support the Canadian Cancer Society CIBC Run for the Cure on Sunday, October 6th at Sir Winston Churchill Park, 301 St. Clair Avenue West, Toronto, where registration gets underway at 8:30 a.m. This is Canada's largest single-day volunteer-led event in support of all people impacted by breast cancer. Funds raised will support world-leading breast cancer research and the compassionate support system for all who need it. For full details, visit sportsnet.ca/590 or cancer.ca. I'll give you another text here. Story of the year is what happens with Marner. That's Paul in Fredericton.
Yeah, certainly going to be the story of the off season unless it gets done in season. I do think that it would be absolutely absurd to not get the full extent of the season before actually signing Mitch Marner. Come to terms on a long-term deal. Same thing happens in the playoffs.
Yep.
It's not going to sit right. Well. Over the summer. So I really, really hope they just get the full scope of everything. 82 games plus however many more.
Then clean slate, make your decisions.
And then make decisions.
Nathan in Vancouver, I'm pretty interested in the Buffalo situation this year. Rough going back and so many good young players.
They do have so many good young players. They do. It never equates to anything for whatever reason. Big pressure on Kevin Adams. They got to get it right
over time.
There.
So the Amazon series comes out tomorrow. Everybody can start binge watching. And there is a great scene, like a little snippet that's floating around the internet, where Connor McDavid's at home with his wife, Lauren, who makes what is one of the most important revelations about one of these biggest superstars in the NHL. Connor is afraid of ketchup. Their personal chef sneaks her bottles of ketchup for the table when he's not looking.
Why bottles?
Or, like, packets? I don't know.
Like, if you have a personal chef, like, just, like, a little, you know, a little side of ketchup would...
I don't understand. Connor is afraid of ketchup.
I mean, I can. This is probably the most I've ever felt...
Connected to Connor.
Connected to Connor McDavid is that I kind of fear mayonnaise.
But you're not afraid of it. Like, if next week came up with a bottle of mayonnaise...
Okay, maybe not a bottle, but you know, like, the mayo bowl, I don't know, where there's, like, there's the Gatorade shower in mayo.
Oh, that's disgusting.
If that cooler of mayo was in this room, I would not be able to look away. Like, I'd be scared of the cooler.
What is it that terrifies you about a
it's
condiment?
It's just disgusting. It's just so gross. And I think that's what's... I think that's what Connor McDavid feels like.
You can
like
be gross, though,
bottle.
But to be afraid of it. Like, it's not going to get you.
Someone could make it so that it gets me, and therefore, I am scared.
Do you remember that show? I think it was on like YTV. Where
slime or
you'd
whatever.
Get slimed. What if they had to do that?
I was slimed in mayonnaise, I think I don't think I'd be able to survive it.
Oh my God.
I think it would be over.
Well, this is important information for people going up against Connor McDavid this season. What if you've got a little ketchup packet and he skates by and you go.
Yeah, that's
like, I'm not even kidding. Like, you could torment Connor McDavid with ketchup.
You could throw little packets.
I'm not saying to do that.
Not
I'm
saying
just
to
saying
throw stuff onto the
if
ice.
You're trying to get an edge on Connor McDavid and you're on the other bench, you got a Gatorade bottle. He like skates by. He's got ketchup. You squirted on him.
Oh, that's
That's dirty.
See, I'm scared of that now.
I think I just manifested that happening.
Condiments in the
ice
in the squirt bottles is just that's terrifying.
Well, everybody, yeah, that's terrible. Everybody's got a weakness, and for Connor McDavid, it is ketchup. I don't know if that's going to come between them winning the cup, but
Calgary Flames got to make sure they do something fun with that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like there's going to be in the Battle of Alberta some ketchup related.
And that's why NHLers don't do these series.
That's why.
Because we learn too much.
We know too much about Connor McDavid. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be up on Sportsnet 590's Fan in a minute to talk Leafs Red Wings. We'll see you there.